You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
The population of China tops out at a little over 1 billion people. The U.S. has about 320 million residents. American pets, livestock, and industry are served by approximately 100,000 veterinarians, with China boasting between 300,000 and 1 million doctors of veterinary medicine. So why did an American-born woman from New York feel the need to start the first government-sanctioned companion animal referral center in Beijing? The story and what she's accomplished is fascinating. My guest is Mary Peng, the CEO and founder of the International Center for Veterinary Medicine, Beijing, China. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Nature at its best is nature at its simplest. At Red Barn, we've kept it simple for 20 years by concentrating on single-ingredient natural dog treats. Because Mother Nature's actually pretty good at this. Bones are just tasty bones. Meat treats are just nourishing meat. It's nature at its simplest. Look at the label. We want you to. Red Barn Natural Treats. Simply the best. Find it in your local pet specialty store. Try our slow-roasted, natural meaty bones.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Mary, thank you so much for being with us. And I really have to thank Mark, my producer, for setting up this great conversation that we are going to have. I know it's going to be marvelous.
Thank you so much. So wonderful to have you and to be here.
Let's go on for your story. I think that is amazing. So you are American born. Tell us how this whole thing started.
I grew up in the United States, and I do consider myself more or less, you know, completely American. My family's from mainland China. Both my parents were born in China. I was actually born in Taiwan. But I was 3 years old when I went to the United States, so I'm a United States citizen. All of my living memory, all of my education, you know, from pre-K upwards and onwards was in America. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, I am extremely American, and I admit that freely, and I'm very proud of that. I wanted to have the opportunity to explore my family's background, you know, where we came from. I think anyone who's an immigrant in the United States sort of has a natural curiosity about where their family is from. And I certainly had that. So I had the wonderful opportunity after I graduated from college, this is way back in 1989, to venture out and explore the world. And I came to Greater China. Greater China meaning I spent time in Taiwan, Hong Kong, and of course mainland China, which is where I now call my home. I had pets the entire time. I adopted a pet when I was in China. This is back in 1994, 1995. I got a cat. It was a little stray kitten that I adopted from a friend.
Is that the one, Boo Boo?
And that is the one and only. That's the Boo Boo, the Boo Boo kitty who started it all. And as a pet owner, you know, growing up in the United States, you know a few things. You know that you should get your pet vaccinated and dewormed, and you should get your pet spayed or neutered. You might not know why. You might not even know what those vaccines are. But with the education in the United States, I think most every kid that grows up there, you have this sort of, you know, knowledge. It's taught to you by, you know, your family and your neighbors, social networks, schools. It's just the thing to do. I realized very quickly that trying to get these basic things done in China was nearly impossible. And, and if you think about this, this was really quite a long time ago. I mean, like 20 years ago. So trying to just find a rabies vaccine to vaccinate my cat was so difficult. Wanting to get her spayed, because she had gone into heat, and neither of us had slept for about 12 days when she was in heat, was crazy hard. And when I was able to finally find the agricultural university in Beijing that did this, I realized real fast when I went up to the main door of the facility that this was not a companion animal hospital. There was a horse standing outside it, and next to the horse was a sheep. And it was really just agricultural livestock medicine. It was herd health. And when I went inside and asked around if they could see my cat, they had to really find a doctor who had any cat experience. And then it was, you know, what are you here for? What do you want to do? I said I wanted to get the cat vaccinated for rabies. I wanted to have her spayed. And the question was,
why?
Why? Exactly. It was like, why do you want to spay this animal? Why? And I thought, well, that's really strange, because the whole point is that you would want to be able to get your pet spayed so they don't reproduce and have all these other cats. But I realized real soon that this was not a country or culture where that was really done. In fact, you know, even today, 20 plus years later, spaying and neutering is not considered something that you would want to do to your pets. I think for a couple of reasons. One, we have a real sort of livestock, you know, agricultural economy that's all based on production. And you don't spay and neuter your cows and pigs and chickens and sheep. The whole point is to have them reproduce. So why would you do this to any of the other animals? Also, you know, spaying and neutering is oftentimes considered cruelty to animals.
Amazing.
It's very, very different than what we think and know from, you know, the United States or North America or other European Union nations. It's really very different culturally in terms of what people think. So this was how I began my foray into going about creating the International Center for Veterinary Services. My own personal experience was very, very difficult just trying to get this done. When we did get Boo-Boo Kitty spayed, they did a good job. The doctors did the very best that they could with what they had, but we didn't have any pain medication. So the cat underwent an ovariohysterectomy and then had no pain medication. If you can imagine what type of surgery, you know, any type of surgery, and then to not have pain control is excruciating. And she was never quite the same after that. She became a very different cat. And any time that she was put into the crate to be taken outside or to be taken to the hospital for her, you know, wellness exams or vaccinations, it was so difficult. She became hysterical. And I think it was due to that memory of thinking, you know, what happened to her the first time when I brought her to be spayed here in China. And I realized it doesn't have to be like this. Why does it have to be like that? The doctors were not inherently cruel. They didn't have the tools that they needed. They didn't have the drugs and the medications that they needed. And that was something I felt deeply about, that it really, really, really struck a chord with me. And it made such a deep impression that when I then had an opportunity to think about what are the things that are most important in life for me personally, and then for all of these other pet owners that I saw in China who love their pets just as much as I did and just didn't have access to this type of companion animal medicine, I decided I was going to do something to change the industry and to make a contribution to China, to the animal healthcare industry, and to bring this level of what we call international, global best practice veterinary medicine to the People's Republic of China. And that is exactly what we did through the International Center for Veterinary Services.
Mary, did you have a background in medicine, or were you just a pet owner who realized there was a need? Because this was a major undertaking.
Everyone assumes I'm a veterinarian. And I'm honored and flattered. I am not a vet. My background is business management. I have an MBA from Columbia University.
That helps.
You know, it's all really, it does help. It is helpful. I am not a vet. I spend my time every day deeply immersed with the doctors because I do help with a lot of our communications. You know, we have a very, very multilingual facility. Our clients are from, you know, 180 different countries. But my background was not in medicine. My background was strictly, you know, business and management. But as a pet owner, I saw all of these animals literally dying because they didn't have proper care. I saw all of these animals being euthanized because their owners felt absolutely desperate that there was nothing that they could do if they needed to, like, go overseas and take a business trip, and there was nobody around the home to give the animal insulin injections or medication administrations or, you know, things that we take for granted. I saw all these animals be abandoned and relinquished because pet owners had no idea how to navigate the process to clear exit health examination requirements to take the pet out of China, and then clear entry requirements for the country to which they were going to export their pet, right, the destination country. All of these things I witnessed for the past 25 years in China, you know, for as long as I've lived here. And I realized this is something that is easily addressed, you know, can be, you know, really, really addressed properly. And if we could get the animals just a hospital facility where they could be boarded or hospitalized for monitoring, and we can give them insulin injections, we can give them medications, we can do some diagnostics for them, we could probably save a lot of lives. And that is exactly what we did, right? So it changed the game. And by virtue of us coming into existence, it's really raised the bar on veterinary medicine in general in China. And now I see a lot more hospitals here that are really emulating and trying to strive towards, you know, international best practice standards, which is really heartening.
So I was talking at the start of the number of people, and I find it mind-boggling that live in China, but then seeing, doing some research, they were guesstimating there's about 4 million pets in China split between cats and dogs. And then if you think the U.S., there's about 86 million cats and 78 million dogs that are considered pets. It sounds as though in China that owning pets is a rather new phenomenon. Would you agree?
It is rather new. I would say the veterinary industry for companion animals has really only existed for about 20 years, you know, about the time that I've been here. So I witnessed it. I would like to speak about the numbers. You know, statistics like this are really, really difficult to come by because there's no set. Even like the State Statistical Bureau does not have a number of the actual number of dogs, the actual number of cats. And what is defined as a pet? Is a dog that's sort of loosely roaming around the farm? Is that considered a pet? You know, does a family consider, is it the owners, or do they just sort of like loosely have a relationship with the animal and put out some food for it? So, you know, that type of definition is pretty hard to come by. I would say, though, through the population statistics that I've, you know, sort of studied and analyzed, and based on some formulas that we do use globally, you know, I think it's fair to say China probably has about 130 million to 150 million owned dogs. These are classified as some sort of, you know, ownership relationship where a family or an individual actually claims, you know, a sort of, you know, care or ownership over the particular dog. So that's what we define as a pet. For cats, I think there's more. Normally, there's more cats in a society, in a population, than there are dogs. So the number of cats would easily be at least that number or more. It's very, very difficult to come through these numbers. I mean, I've never seen any research report that said, this is it.
So that number just didn't seem feasible with the number of people that you have.
No. And it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. If you have a population that's four times that of the United States, to say that we have less than half the number of dogs. You know, I've seen, you know, the numbers that you've looked up, I've seen them too. So like 40 million pet dogs in China. That's exceedingly low. That's just very, very low. So we know the numbers are much higher. What this means is that China is on the same trajectory as all these other countries in the world that love their pets. China's in the middle of like the greatest love affair ever in the history of its, you know, nation with our companion animals. People are discovering the love, what we call the human-animal bond, what that feels like in terms of having an animal that loves you, that you love. That love is unconditional from the animal to the human, and just how enriching and rewarding that special relationship is. And Chinese pet owners are like people anywhere else in the world. I mean, they love their pets deeply and unreservedly. Now, that's a big country. And we have all types of people here, just like we do in the States. You know, you have pet owners that are extremely devoted, where the pet is like a child, or, you know, it's a sibling to the other children in the household. It's a member of family. When the animal is sick, you know, it's like the son or daughter being sick. It's the exact same stress and level of concern.
Do you think, Mary, it's because of that one child policy that was just recently rescinded, that people have said, okay, I can't have any more children, or I can't have a child at all, so I'll have a pet? Do you think that brought it about?
I think it did. I think it actually started not so much with the people that could only have one child or decided not to have children. I really think it started with the empty nesters, you know, the retirees. You know, that one child policy was put into place in the early 1980s. So now, 30-plus years later, you see the end result, which is that a lot of these families, you know, with adult children that are, you know, 20-plus, 30-plus, you know, they have one child. So that one child leaves the home. You know, the child goes to work. It might move to another city, or it might move overseas. The empty nester population is huge among that generation of people that can only have one child. So they really had companion animals as their only companion. A lot of times they lived alone. Many times they were widows or widowers, and the pet was their only friend and true companion in life. And that pet was what I saw as being so instrumental in providing comfort and companionship and solace, and giving a lot of people meaning in life, to get out of bed, to walk the dog, to feed the cat. That was what I really saw. This younger generation of pet owners that are, you know, that are in the midst of having children, they are also another group of people that are really reaching out to pets. Because why? Having a companion animal gives companionship to your one child, but it also teaches them, you know, lessons in life that I think we all need to learn. You know, how to be kind, how to be considerate, how to be responsible for another living being in your household, how to have empathy and compassion and care. That's what I see is really important. It's these life lessons. With the adjustment of the one-child policy, right now it's like, oh, you can have two kids. But I'm not really sure, and I think a lot of people that study population and economics would agree that it's going to make any major change in the habits right now in terms of family planning. It's very expensive to have more than one child. And it's been so deeply ingrained in the culture for more than 30 years now, I think it's going to take some time before families actually decide that they may want to have more than one child.
When I was recently in China, my tour director has one child, and talking about the amount of time and money that goes in trying to have your child succeed in life. Because here in the United States, if you say you're one in a million, wow, you're really a standout. But one in a million China, there's a million other just like you.
That's right. You really have to be one in a billion here, you know, which is a much higher bar, much higher bar.
Well, you were talking about being responsible. Well, I'm responsible to our sponsors, so we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with Mary Ping and talking about the International Center for Veterinary Services in Beijing, China. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
It's DesignerPetSweaters.com. Hand-knitted designer sweaters for your precious pup or cool cat. Beautiful couture patterns for your pets, including custom-knitted formal wear, casual wear, yachting, and even sports-themed. Many designer pet sweaters include feathered tammy hats, top hats, and a lot of sparkle. Each sweater includes leg loops, front paw sleeves, and leash opening. Visit DesignerPetSweaters.com to order your four-legged fashions today. Your pets will stay warm for the winter and be runway ready. Large or small, we fit them all. DesignerPetSweaters.com.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio Talk and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand, only from Pet Life Radio.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
Radio. PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Mary, this is really fascinating. I think a lot of people had no idea of where veterinary medicine was, is, and going in China and how things are changing. Tell us a little bit about your hospital, your center. What does it do that's different than, say, some of the other veterinary hospitals there in Beijing or China in general?
I think the greatest difference is that we use a very methodical standard for our care in terms of the type of training that we do. You know, we train our doctors against the global best protocols that are endorsed and recommended by the American Veterinary Medical Association. Now, for Americans, this might not seem like any big deal because it's a standard that we've used to. I also, you know, grew up in the States with my pets. But if you start traveling around the world, and if you go to emerging markets especially, you'll realize that there's no sort of benchmark standard. And what this means, very simply, is that, you know, when I, you know, had all my pets here and I was bringing them to, you know, veterinarians and local clinics here, it was very difficult because it wasn't so much a very thorough diagnostic and understanding of the pet's background and medical history and age and or anything. It was just, oh, okay, we have an eye infection. Let's just look at the eye and let's just give it some eye medications.
And come back in a couple weeks. And then you have to worry about the rest of the pet, yes.
Right, and come back in a couple of weeks, and then we'll see how the eye is doing, and if we need a refill, we'll refill. It was very much, you know, just focusing on the presentation of the actual symptom rather than this whole, in medicine, we have the SOAP diagnostics, right? Subjective, objective, assessment, and a plan. You would need to understand, like, what are all the things that could possibly cause this cat to have a running eye? And there are many, many body systems that, you know, can produce this end result symptom. And there are many, many diseases or other issues going on that can result in this end result that we see. So you can't just treat the symptom. You've got to do a proper diagnosis to see what is causing this. And there are many. It's that type of really very, very structured, deep understanding of all the body systems, deep understanding of what are things that can go wrong and you know, diseases that can manifest itself in the presentation of the symptoms that we see when your pet is brought to the pet hospital. It was very different for me because I, you know, just from my own personal life experience of having seen doctors myself and having brought my pets to veterinarians in you know, the U.S. and, you know, some other countries, it was real different, and I realized that we weren't getting to the root of a lot of these problems because the doctors here had not been trained in that type of case-based problem solving, you know, a very structured, you know, diagnostic-driven, evidence-based medicine analysis to really help our pets. And you know what? To some extent, a lot of human medicine that's here that I see is still like that. And we weren't getting the best results because we didn't really understand what was the root cause, what was the true diagnosis for these patients that we were seeing. So we created a veterinary learning exchange program, which is unique. Even, you know, 10 years later, because we've been around for 10 years now, 10 years later, it's still the only legally authorized and recognized program in China where we invite veterinarians from all over the world, including the States, Canada, European Union countries, Australia, New Zealand. I mean, you name it. We've had veterinarians from all over the world. They are invited through ICVS. They can come, you know, to our hospital, and they can live here and work together with our veterinarians. This, by the way, is a nonprofit program, right? So that we have an opportunity and we create a bridge between China and all these other countries and all these other doctors around the world to really help generate a conversation, to really help exchange knowledge. What are the latest medical practices? What are the latest, you know, clinical research that's out there? What are the latest, you know, medical equipment that we're using? What are the newest and latest drugs? How do we use them? What are interactions? What do we need to be careful about? You can't stay stagnant in many industries, but especially in medicine. You know, continuing education is actually required among the, you know, Chinese doctors as they are for all the other doctors around the world. But we also need to provide a lot of supplementation. You know, we have huge challenges with the language. Mandarin Chinese is not an easy language to learn. You know, it takes, you know, a long time to be conversational. And not everybody in China speaks English. So we have a bilingual facility. All of our, you know, key staff, department heads, you know, we have translators so that we can really facilitate this exchange of knowledge. And by having the international, you know, veterinarians, what we call our foreign consultant veterinarians in China, it's not a one-way street. It's not like they come and they do all this, you know, they just do big knowledge exchange, learning one way to the Chinese vets. They learn so much more. All of the international veterinarians that have come through ICVS and spent time in China, whether it's 3 months or 2 years that they've been here, the key takeaway, the key statement that we always hear from them is, this was a life-changing experience. They never saw the cases that they saw here in China because, you know, to a certain extent, a lot of these infectious diseases have been eradicated through our excellent vaccination programs, preventative health care legacy, and you just don't see this type of cases.
What are
but
some
you
of
only
the
read about it.
What are some of the special health threats there in China? What are the different things that you're seeing there?
I think if you look back in the last 50 years at emerging infectious diseases globally, right, a lot of the emerging infectious diseases that have been diagnosed in the last 50 years come from emerging markets. Anything that's zoonosis in nature that can be, you know, transmitted from one animal species to another species, from, you know, for humans. For example, let's talk about the AIDS, the simian AIDS virus. We believe it came from monkeys, from the bush hunters that contracted it, and then, you know, it mutated and crossed into the human species. Look at all the concern globally about avian influenza, swine flu. These diseases are named after the animals because they originated from the animal, jumped species, came into the humans, and now it's, you know, a human disease as well. So China's really super concerned about emerging infectious diseases. If you think back to 2003 when there was the global SARS epidemic, do you remember?
Yes.
When SARS was first diagnosed, that was scary. We lived through that. I lived through that personally here in China. It was really frightening. And, you know, again, they traced it back to a mutation of the coronavirus that they first identified in these little sort of like ferret weasel-like animals in southern China. And it was because the hunters, you know, people were catching these animals and they were selling them in, you know, live animal markets and people were eating them. So there was contact. So that type, you know, after SARS, wow, China really, really took a very different stance on public health. So veterinary health care in China is a bit different than that of the United States and other countries. Veterinary health care, the primary emphasis is still the prevention of infectious diseases from the animals to humans. That's really what infectious, you know, infectious disease prevention and animal health care is still about for most of the country. Now, we still have rabies. That's a really big issue here. More than 3,000 people a year die from rabies. The reservoir is in our canine population because more than 95% of the confirmed rabies deaths in China are linked back to exposures to dogs. So
I found it fascinating, Mary, that only 10-20% of the Chinese dogs are vaccinated, and it sounds for rabies, and that sounds like it goes back to what you're saying, the education of why do I get neutered, why do I get vaccines. How are you broaching that? How is ICVS broaching that educational barrier?
We do this every single day. You know, I mean, World Rabies Day is September 28th every year. For us, World Rabies Day is every day, every appointment, every hour of every day. And we counsel our pet owners not just about rabies, you know, vaccinations and preventative health care for their pets, but also for the people in terms of what to do, how to prevent rabies, how to, you know, be aware, how to do proper, you know, disinfection, go to the doctor right away, get checked out, you know, discuss the animal's health history, was it ever rabies vaccinated? And with such a low vaccination coverage rate of only 10-20%, this is despite China having a national law that every single dog in this country has to be rabies vaccinated every year. This is the national law for dogs. And we have very, very low compliance, as you can see, if we're only at 10 to 20%. Enforcement is extremely difficult. Most of the rabies cases are diagnosed or confirmed, you know, in humans living outside of the key cities. These are villages, Chinese villages, where the vaccination coverage rate for rabies in our dogs is less than 3% in the countryside, in the villages. So that's a real area that we're not covering. And we need to have better education for pet owners. And also the government needs to do more. They're really strapped for resources in terms of human resources and also for funding. And we're putting the emphasis, in my opinion, incorrectly on people who, after they have been exposed to a dog bite or a cat scratch, you know, they get 5 vaccinations for rabies as post-exposure treatment, and oftentimes they're also recommended to get the human rabies immunoglobulin. That is after the fact. That's not preventative health care. Prevention starts with where the vectors are, and that's really vaccinating the dogs and the cats. You know, if we can get the vaccination coverage rate for our dog population to about 70%, I think you're going to start to see, you know, rabies infection rates like that of the U.S., where it's mainly like 1 to 3 cases a year of confirmed rabies deaths in the United States, and those are stats from the CDC. And all those deaths, unfortunately, are from, you know, wildlife. It's not from dogs and cats. It's really wildlife exposure.
And Mary, you're also talking about cats, and I understand that one of the things that ICVS does is really get involved with the feral cat issue. 5 million feral cats are deemed to be roaming through Beijing. How do you top that problem? That is just, seems like unfathomable numbers to try to control and do something about.
It is. It's no easy feat. And it's not, you know, not that we've cracked this nut, that we have a solution. We do have a solution. It just needs to be more broadly adopted. When we first opened doors in 2006, immediately upon opening our doors, we also instituted the first structured trap, neuter, return program. Again, in line with global best practices, which is that we do mass trapping. We have humane cat traps. We have a bank of traps. We neuter them. We spay them. We tip their ears so that they are identifiable as an already neutered spayed cat. We rabies vaccinate every single cat that comes through our program. We do hundreds and hundreds of feral and stray cats every year. Again, this
Your
is a nonprofit program. They're excellent surgeons. They're really fantastic. We have, you know, we have 2 surgery theaters. You know, we've got a full service facility, and we can handle a really high volume in our facility. We're one of the largest animal hospitals in China. But still, we have a lot of cats. And the population of the feral stray cats that are living out on the street, why is it such a broad range from 500,000 to 5 million? Because nobody knows. Nobody has a real idea. If you look at formulas that we can use that are used in the States by the Humane Society, the ASPCA, for every 6 humans, you can say that there's 1 cat. So if you look at Beijing alone, you know, our population is anywhere from 22 to 24 million people. So if you just divide that by 6, you know, a number of 3 to 4 million cats in this city alone, I think is very reasonable. A lot of those are owned, but an even greater number are out on the streets. What I saw was the number of cats on the streets in our residential compounds, in, you know, the courtyards, what we, you know, courtyard kitties, really started to explode after SARS. Why? A lot of people got concerned that they were going to get SARS from their pets. You know, so there was this erroneous belief. That's right. There was an erroneous belief that it was coming from, you know, pets, especially cats, because this little wildlife animal in southern China that was diagnosed with the, you know, mutated coronavirus was a little weasel-like animal called a civet cat. Unfortunately, it had the word cat in the end of its name. So people just started associating with household cats. I mean, these are completely different species. This has nothing to do with the cats. But we saw our cat colonies explode in population numbers from, you know, one colony that I had been taking care of in 2002, 2003, before SARS. We had about 4 or 5 cats. After SARS, this colony exploded to 23, 26 cats because people were dumping their animals. So this caused a huge population increase in terms of the number of street cats available that, you know, at that time. Almost none of these pets were neutered or spayed. So they started having kittens. And as you can see, remember those exponential trees, multiplication exponential trees that we learned in junior high school? That was what we saw happening, in that you had this population pyramid. I mean, just kept getting, you know, larger and larger and larger every few months, because every 2 or 3 months, the cat would have another litter.
Is this ICVS getting on top of this now?
We are doing our best. We have a huge program. We give, free TNR workshops. I'm a certified trap, neuter, return practitioner. I was certified in the United States by Neighborhood Cats, a nonprofit organization that taught me how to do TNR, and I was certified back in 2003, 2002. So we began the first structured program where we use mass trapping. They come in, we do, you know, high volume spay neuters. They're all rabies vaccinated. They're returned to the courtyard compounds the very next day after their surgeries. And this helps to keep the population stable. Now, the demand for this type of service is huge. We cannot handle all of the surgeries, but what we do is that we train, you know, the volunteers, and they then become ICVS TNR certified. What they can then do is they go back out into the population, into the communities, and they train the other feeders. So in a way, it's sort of like the, you know, train the trainer, and then
how
we
do you
can definitely
fund all
handle
this?
It. It's not easy. I mean, the hospital, ICVS donates about $500,000 renminbi in our services a year to our nonprofit humane animal welfare programs, of which there are many. TNR is just one of the many programs that we have. We have shelter medicine programs, we have adoption programs, we have wellness and vaccination exams for the registered guide dogs for the blind. They can come in every year and get a great annual wellness checkup, including blood work, heartworm antigen testing. You know, we donate all of these services because there is no ASPCA here. There is no Humane Society International here. There is nothing here, you know, that you and I know from the United States where you can take your pet and you can get, you know, subsidized or very low-cost health care and, you know, have a healthy animal. This is not available. So we have to do all of this ourselves. We receive no government funding. There's no subsidy. We do not get any tax benefits or tax breaks. You know, for any donations that we receive, we still have to pay taxes on it. Because China doesn't have that type of tax-free structure right now for a lot of the organizations that are doing nonprofit work. It's extremely difficult to register a nonprofit organization. There's so many hoops that you have to jump through. It makes it almost impossible for many organizations.
Good thing you have an MBA so you know how to handle your in finances.
It's been very helpful. It has been very helpful. I mean, this is anybody who works in a veterinary hospital or clinic in any country worldwide. You know, we're on the same boat. This is not a 9-to-5 job. This is 7 days a week. It can be 24/7 because healthcare is 24/7, right? So it is a way of life and it's a dedication. And, you know, if you are looking for an easier life, like I just want, you know, a very, you know, straightforward 9-to-5, have my weekends off, then this is not the profession. You know, I think medical profession in general. I find it interesting because I'm not a vet.
Mary, and I find it fascinating that your enthusiasm is just contagious. And I think the listeners will understand that it is so different there. And that thankfully, someone such as yourself and ICVS is there to help that Chinese pet population. If people were interested, because I know we could go on for another half hour to an hour, if people were interested in learning more about ICVS and wanted to maybe donate, how would they do it?
Oh, that would be so wonderful and easy. Visit our website. The website is ICVSASIA.com. It's ICVSASIA.com, one word. We have a PayPal donation site right on the landing page, the front page. Anyone that's listening is so welcome to make a donation. And, you know, we acknowledge every single donation. You'll hear from us. You'll receive updates. We'll subscribe you to our newsletters. You can see all the animals that we help. We're in the middle right now of helping 12 dogs that were rescued from the slaughterhouses, right? They were going to be slaughtered for dog meat. They were rescued from the slaughterhouses. They have been at ICVS from between 1 to 2 months, where they have been cared for, rehabilitated, vaccinated. They're all healthy. And this group of animals have been adopted by Americans who made donations through one of our partners in the United States, this little nonprofit organization called the Hope and Wellness Foundation. And they're going to help bring these 12 animals to their adoption families in California, in Los Angeles.
If you need a veterinarian to go with them, you know, from China to the U.S., please, I will sign up. I will go back to China and help bring them over.
Oh, my goodness, that would be wonderful. And we always have more rescued animals coming in. So this is the type of support that we need, because they need food, they need drugs, they need medication. Some of them needed surgeries. Some of them had parvovirus, and we rescued them back from the brink. And now they're healthy, and they're going to join their adoption families in America. So the donations will really help us cover a lot of the a lot of the medications and the medical supplies that we had to purchase on the behalf of these animals. And we're really, really thrilled and happy and so honored to be able to have helped these wonderful, beautiful animals who went from being dog meat, becoming dog meat, to now becoming adopted pets, and they're going to be joining their families in the United States, and we're thrilled. Mm.
What a great way to end this conversation, Mary. Thank you so much. I've been so honored to have Mary Peng, the CEO and founder of the International Center for Veterinary Services, Beijing, China. Mary, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.